irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle Cohen. That's me, and welcome everybody here to LA Talk Radio. Another great show as always for you. So nice to have you with me, everyone. Ooh, you're going to love today's show, so don't you go anywhere. Of course, you all know that the show is available for downloading and replaying if you have to do something important. But nothing's more important than this. Right? Right? Okay, let me ask you some questions, guys, because this is really an important subject. One of the most important, I think. How would you deal, or have you had to cope with, a diagnosis of cancer or another serious disease? What if you had to deal with someone who was bullying you at work and became unemployed and felt like you had no support in the world, maybe even from your family, during the same time of your diagnosis? Well, most of us think we would crumble, right? I probably just want to stay in bed, put the covers over our head, and hide from the world. I'm just not going to deal with this right now. Get me some good medication. I'm passing out for 2 years. But, you know, there are some people who have a series of what most of us would define as negative experiences who don't get beaten down. They become stronger and more loving about life, themselves, and others. And today you're going to hear an incredible story from someone who's overcome so much in her life and is sharing her secrets. She's going to talk about how she overcame many of life's roadblocks through her own near-death cancer experience. And also she's going to share some of the lessons she learned from science. She's a scientist. And spirituality. So I want you to stay right here on the couch, and I encourage you to, you know, give me a call if you'd like. I'd prefer emails because that way I can really track your questions a lot better for my special guest, who I'll introduce in just a minute. You can email us here at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Easy to do. straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Or you can call live in the studio, 323-203-0815, if you have any questions or comments from my guest. So let's get right to it. My special guest is an amazing, inspiring woman. Her name is Dr. Wendy Trainer. She's a social psychologist, happiness expert. I love that, Wendy. That's awesome. Happiness expert. And, of course, an author. And she's published articles on depression and emotion in peer-reviewed journals. She's a former UCLA visiting scholar, director of healing consulting in Los Angeles. She's given talks all around the world at various universities. And her insights into the art of happiness, I think, represent a convergence of science and spirit. And you guys know, you've listened to me for a while, I am totally into talking about studies and science and spirit, because I think they're one and the same. That's all I have to say about that. We'll get into that. But anyway, Wendy is amazing. She's just gone through such a journey she's going to share with you, and how she overcame her diagnosis, and just, you know, her inspirational stories for you. And so the book is called A Gift of Cancer. Okay, a life-changing book. Turn your tragedy into treasure. It's a treasure map to happiness. And I love that word, treasure. Wendy, welcome to the show, honey. So nice to see you.
It is so fantastic to be here. And with all our listeners, I'm so honored that you are listening and joining us today.
Yay. And again, if you have any questions or comments, you can email us, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Or give us a shout here if you want to get your voice on the air. You're not a shy person. 323-203-0815. 15. So you wrote this great book, Inspirational, A Gift of Cancer. When I kind of first received your book, I was sort of taken aback by the title. You know, then I realized that you were talking about the positive life lessons that you learned from your experience. So, great story. What was it that made you decide to write this story?
Such a good question, Dr. Michelle. I was struck with the meaninglessness of it all.
Yes.
And at first, you know, thinking, how am I going to continue living? How can I go on? And I realized if I could use my suffering to make a positive difference in the lives of others.
Yes. Yes.
Then I would have a reason to continue living. So it was really you, my readers, you, my listeners, mm-hmm. who inspired me to write the book, to find a positive way out of this situation. Because by realizing that if I could find a positive way out and share it in my writing, then you could find a positive way out, and then I would have a purpose for living.
Wow. What a great answer. I love that. Wendy, you are amazing. You're just amazing. And you're also described, you know, in your book and a lot of the information when you go online about yourself. And you do a lot of seminars about this as well, empowering people, which I love, as a workplace bullying survivor. So what I'd love you to do is kind of set up the story about what was going on with you before and during your cancer diagnosis and some of the scary things that you had to deal with.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for asking.
Sure.
So just to give you some backstory, I was diagnosed in 2005, and the year before 2004, I'd gotten my PhD. Then go back even further in time to 1997. I just graduated from college. I had my first job out of school.
Wow.
I was so excited. I wanted to make a positive difference. And then I discovered on this first job that I was not accepted for being who I am.
Uh-uh.
And that's where I was bullied. It was so sad. They called me slummy.
What?
Can you believe it?
What's that mean? What is that?
They said it was because I lived in a lower income neighborhood. And they made fun of me for driving an old station wagon. And they said I should get a new fancy car. And I rode my bicycle to work. And they didn't like that either. And the boss said he was going to drive me home no matter what I did if I kept in biking to work again.
Gosh.
I know. I just wanted to be me.
Right.
But
right.
I didn't fit in.
Right, right.
And so they were trying to get me to fit in, I guess, by, you know, singling me out and saying, you know, we're not going to invite you to our parties because they had some parties and I wasn't invited.
Aww.
And calling me slummy. So anyway, that was disheartening. And it came to one day when I was with my superior and he said, Wendy, get me a Coke. And I said, no.
Wow.
I'm not going to get you a Coke.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to just follow his orders. And he said, you know what your problem is, Wendy, is that you think individuality is your right, that independence is your right. It was individuality or independence.
Yes.
And he said, you know, if you continue with your ways, you're going to be butting heads with top management here. And so I realized, oh my gosh, you know, I want to be free to be me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the next day I quit my job.
Good for you.
And I moved back to California.
Yes.
And so that was the beginning of my journey. You know, there's this idea of the hero's journey.
Right.
It's an idea from Joseph Campbell.
Right.
He studied the mythologies and the religions all around the world, and he discovered the singular theme, which is this idea of the hero's journey, that is five steps.
Wow.
And
yes,
this
is exactly.
my first step, which is leaving the known.
Yes.
To
yes.
go within.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That must have been scary, though, for
it
you.
It was scary. And, you know, it was not what anyone wanted for me. They wanted me to have this nice job and, you know, money and status. But I needed to follow my heart.
So you're talking about you're talking maybe about family and friends. And, you know, they kind of like have judgment on us. And this is what, oh, good. They're out of college. They finally have a job. This is what they're going to be doing. Right.
So,
well, good for you for freeing yourself.
Yeah. So I freed myself at that level. But I also wanted to understand why people were happy making others unhappy, because the bullying was actually haunting for me. It may sound so trivial, but it was really terrified me. And there was some issue at work where they'd asked me to do something that was illegal without me knowing it. And then there was the whole integrity thing. And I wanted to go to graduate school to understand why people can be happy making others unhappy, whether it's, cheating or stealing or just being mean to people. And so I did my research. My dissertation was on why good people do bad things.
Yes. Wow. What a great dissertation. Fascinating
stuff. Fascinating stuff. And I learned amazing stuff.
Yes, I bet you did. And just, did you find a lot of the underlying causes in your studies, in your research, came from the individuals are suffering who are bullying, of course, and doing bad things. The bullies, the people who like to hurt us or cheat or think they're getting away with something, they're suffering so deeply. Their souls are just fractured. So they have to project that onto other people, and that's the way they survive. But that's no fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can be as analytic as we, can and try to be empathetic to them, but damn, it still hurts. What is that what you found in a lot of your
Absolutely. Research? Yeah. The way I say it a little differently, but it's the same idea. Yeah. Ultimately, I believe that there's two avenues, two ways I can answer this. Yeah. One is our research showed that the most mistrustful people were the least trustworthy. That is, the people who were cheating or stealing.
Yes.
They were people who reported that they thought human nature in general was untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, we found that belief was rooted in what we call their reference group behavior.
Okay.
So people who would steal coins in our studies reported that their friends would steal coins. And that they thought most people would steal coins.
Right.
So what's interesting is this idea of a reference group is this idea that each of us in the world has a group of people whose standards we use as our own to judge ourselves and others.
Aha.
And so what this means is that our ideas of what are good, right, and true aren't necessarily always our own. They can be reference group based. But we could go deep there if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can go deep, girl.
We can.
But but no, that's right. So there's two different factors in, why people, and many other factors, I'm sure, about their stuff, but that's pure study stuff
that
you found. That's
pure research. Yeah. But as you read in my book, I conclude that the reason people provoke others, bullies, etc., is because they lack self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they had self-acceptance, genuine self-acceptance, they would be at peace with themselves and all that is, and they would have no motivation to provoke.
Boy, is that true. It's all about self-esteem, how we really care for ourselves, which builds empathy for others, right?
And what's fascinating is out of my research, I discovered that we need to distinguish between self-esteem and self-love because self-esteem is about, oftentimes it's about this false self. Each of us has our true self, which we've yet to discover.
Mm-hmm.
You could think of it as your soul, or you could think of it as who I am without the wounds of conditional love, or who I am when I'm alone in nature. But a lot of us still think we are who the social world tells us that we are. The supermodel, the baker, the teacher. Yeah. And as long as we identify with that social role that they give us, we're going to suffer.
Boy, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
because
so true, Wendy. Yeah. Right on, girl. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Wendy Trainer. She is a doctor. She holds a PhD in social psychology. And we're talking about her latest book, The Gift of Cancer. It's a life-changing book which turns your tragedy into treasure, a treasure map to happiness. And it's not just specifically for folks who may have cancer, or, you know, it's if you have some other diagnosis, or even if your life is having really a lot of negative roadblocks in it, whether it's, you know, employment, relationships, family issues, like we just said, self-esteem issues, whatever. It's really an inspirational book and a lot of stories and helpful ideas about how you can change your life, because you sure did, Wendy. Girl, you really did. I mean, you changed your life, and I'm so proud of you. You're so young. I love that, because it's so nice to have someone who's just sort of got this really young wisdom that came. You know what I'm saying? We always see people as being older. It's like, oh, he's or she's, you know, they've had a lot of, but you got it, girl. You were open to it. Like you and I were talking about before the show, you were open to it. See, so it came to you. So we were just kind of touching on, oh, by the way, guys, if you want to email us and ask a question to Wendy, you can do so. It's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So we're talking about, you know, how we identify ourselves and how, you know, we project our own negativity onto the world and why people are mean to other people and all that. But you talk about the concepts in your book, and I know you also have another book out, which we'll talk about socialization theory, which is really good stuff. You also talk about what's called the identity shift effect. It really helped you create your moment. They call that an aha moment. And again, you're so young, you had it. Of sudden realization, inspiration, and insight that helped you understand yourself and overcome all these things that were happening to you. So can you share with listeners a little bit more about the socialization theory and that shift?
I would be honored. I would be honored. Okay. There are two places I want to start at the same time. So let me just explain that there's this socialization theory that came out of my research of other people's research in my field of social psychology.
Yes, yes.
And just like we use a thread and needle to sew together patches of fabric into a quilt, I used the thread and needle of logic to sew together the patches of research findings in my field into an overarching tapestry of understanding that unbelievably to my disbelief mirrored the tenets of spiritual truth.
Wow.
And
you're very intelligent, young lady.
I got lucky. I think I just got lucky.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well,
here's what we found.
Okay.
So we found that there are two basic building block concepts. One is this idea of a reference group that we talked about earlier, the group whose standards you internalize as your own. Mm-hmm. Whether it's about standards of politics, music, you know, clothes, or morality. The second building block concept we want to hold on to is this idea of what I call an everyday group. Mm. Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe, another favorite author of mine, calls it the daily group, which is even more concise. Mm. And it's the group in whose context we generally find ourselves. And what I believe is that if we are trapped in a daily group that rejects us as we are, we will come to reject ourselves, because over time it becomes our reference group if there's no other reference point. Mm-hmm. So all these people who get bullied or rejected, it might be you, one of our listeners, know that there is an alternative reference point, which is the non-social.
Mm-hmm. And what's that?
The non-social is what I would call nature or the self. Mm-hmm. And there are three crucial properties that are distinguish the social from the non-social. And here they are. In the social world, the social world gives us identities or roles to play.
Right.
Whereas in the non-social world, we have no identities or roles. We are just isness.
Yes.
We just are one with what is.
Right.
The mountains,
right.
The sea.
Yeah.
Okay. Two, the social world gives us standards to live up to.
Right.
And just like
that's
you were
right.
talking about
exactly.
with self-esteem, if we live up to those standards,
right.
they'll accept us.
Yes.
If we fail to live up to those standards, they reject us.
Yeah.
And then that means our happiness is dependent on whether or not the social world accepts or rejects us.
Oh, boy.
And
that big. That's
so
a huge concept.
Huge.
Yes.
It means we'll never be happy forever.
That's right.
Until we make the non-social our reference group.
That's
right. Because when we do,
yeah.
then we have no identity. We have
right.
no standards to
right.
live up to.
Right.
The mountains
right.
accept us as we are. And we have no judgment.
Yes.
We are unconditionally acceptable mm-hmm. in nature or with
yeah.
ourselves.
Wow.
I know. It's so amazing. So all we have to do to heal ourselves, to win genuine self-acceptance, is to make the non-social our reference group, which we do through long-term contact with the non-social, which means
yeah.
we make daily time alone for ourselves. And I advise doing meditation because
yes.
then our mind
right.
is clear of social
yes.
clutter,
social yeah.
thoughts, you know, conflict-ridden thoughts
yes.
are evaporating, and
yes.
and we can be at peace with ourselves and all that is. So that's the solution.
I think that's awesome. And a lot of people come, and I'm sure the people who, you know, you meet through working with individuals and a lot of your seminars, they come up to you and they say, yeah, but I can't stop the chatter. I can't stop, you know, we turn on the TV and the negative media and the news and I can't, what am I going to do when my girlfriend left me and my parents hate me? And, but you know, there's always something that is going on in their brain about, you know, how do you expect me to overcome this stuff? How do you expect me to go within and meditate on just calming my brain? I can't do that. I have to. What would you say to that?
I have two answers because
no
there are two issues, okay?
yeah.
One is this victimhood issue and the other is perceived victimhood.
Mm.
And the other issue is no time to meditate. And for the no time to meditate, I'll start there first. I'd say, you know, you have to become a master of yourself or others will become your master.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. That's so profound. Yeah.
So you
yeah.
got to make the time or else
yes.
you're always going to be a slave to society.
That's right. Right. You get up and get on that computer and boom, you're on all the social media and you're answering emails and you're going, yeah, you've got to just, you talked to me earlier. You said, hey, I got to meditate this morning. And I went, wow, I didn't.
Hi.
Good for you, girl.
I know. I did yoga in my car. How cool is that?
You'd be one of those cool people to watch while driving.
You know, that's what, exactly.
She's like, that's awesome. So you're cool.
That's
so
cool. So here's the second
okay,
thing.
Okay, second one.
Okay, so in terms of any of us who are feeling like, you know, we've been, you know, stepped on, we're feeling the victimhood
mm-hmm.
mentality,
yeah.
I give a metaphor, which is hopefully enlightening to you, because it was profound for me to really shift from a victimhood mindset
right.
to a self-empowerment.
Right.
And it's a very, you know, radical shift. It's a very slight shift in your mind, but it has radical consequences.
Yes, yes.
And as long as we think of ourselves as a victim, we are going to be stuck in a pit of negative emotion. As long as we tell ourselves,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I can't, I have no control, we're going to feel helpless and unhappy. And,
right.
Okay. So what we want to do is tell ourselves we have some control because we do have some control of our emotions. Mm. It's not about what they did to us. It's not about the situation we're in. It's
mm-hmm.
about the emotion inside us. That is the root of our suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our responsibility to release that negative emotion through body and breathwork practices like yoga, meditation, walking in nature, and to embody positive or peaceful thoughts, you know, oh gosh, this is
yeah.
a new
yes.
idea here I have.
Yes.
And I call it using, just like an archer is an archery.
Yes.
And
yeah.
they have a bow and
sure.
an arrow and they aim it at a target. We can use the bow of our awareness to aim the arrow of our perception on the target of emotion that we want to feel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's what I call mind love. It's not just about body love, working with the body and breath work, but we want to do, you know, acrobatics in our mind to keep our peaceful feelings, because
right,
research
right.
shows that what we feel is linked to what we think. You know, someone,
yes, yes.
Was it Descartes said, I think, therefore I am.
Yes.
I say, I think, therefore I feel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So we want to do that. And let's see, is there anything else here? So for the whole victimhood mentality thing, here's another analogy. Think of a plane that's trying to take liftoff over a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we have the victimhood mentality, we keep hitting the mountain. We can't quite get over it.
Right.
And fly the friendly skies. So what we need to do is get the liftoff power of self, you know, self-responsibility for our emotions,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then nothing can stop us. And we get the liftoff power we need to go over that mountain, and now we can fly the friendly skies of self-empowerment and emotional freedom.
I love that. Good one. Love that analogy, girl. Well, we have an email from someone.
Ooh,
so
good. Let's check it out.
It kind of maybe sort of has to do with what we're talking about here. It is from James, I guess. I don't know if that's his real name. But thank you so much for emailing us at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Says, hey, Wendy, I grew up with a dad who was very mean to me and also criticized me. Mm-hmm. I always felt low self-esteem. He was verbally abusive. My mother never did anything about it because she was afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of therapy, which has helped me through understanding why he did what he did. What I want to know now as a 34-year-old man, how can I change my relationship with him when I try to keep peace and he still hasn't changed?
Awesome.
Woo!
I love your question. I love your question because I can relate to it 100%.
Wow.
I've had the same experience.
Wow.
Bless you. Not with my father, bless him, but with my own mother, bless
her. Yes.
And what I have done, which I believe has had a positive impact on our relationship, is whenever she criticizes me, I say, well, I love you just the way you are. And I just throw love at her, back at her incessantly.
Yes. How does she respond to that?
She says nothing. She goes quiet. And I'm at peace.
That's right. And, you know, that's a great, you know, thing to suggest, because I think, you know, James, I mean, you don't have to go to the dark place and allow him to suck you in to that negative vortex. You know, you can just stay, like Wendy said, you can stay on the high disc and just continue to say, hey, Dad, that's a great idea. Whatever he has to say, or if he says something negative, one of my favorites is, that's an interesting point. I'll think about that. So you don't go there, right? You say, oh, and always, like you said, hey, I love you, because they have nowhere to go. Right? It's just kind of confusing because they want to continue to engage the drama. So that's a great answer, Wendy. Thank you, James, so much. He just said thank you for that great email. Good, good, good. Hopefully you'll, you know, read Wendy's book. It's called The Gift of Cancer. Turn your tragedy into a treasure map to happiness. And it's not necessarily about the fact that you have to have a diagnosis of cancer or any other serious disease. It's about changing your life in general. Yeah, and how to, you know, overcome being bullied, how to overcome low self-esteem, you know, early environmental problems from parents, all that stuff.
And even depression.
Oh,
I think it would
help
people who are depressed.
Right. Oh, yes.
Because I believe, based on my research, that people who have socially induced depression have it because they are trapped in a social environment that rejects them as they are. And so if we are one of those people, we'll come to reject ourselves. And then it seems like the conflict is inescapable, but it's not. The good news is it's not. All we have to do is navigate ourselves into an unconditionally loving, or accepting environment.
Yes.
And if we can't find it, to become our own.
Yes, exactly. That's beautiful. Love that. And by the way, in case you want to call, yeah, feel free to do so, folks. 323-203-0815 here on LA Talk Radio. And if you're shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, you can, of course, email me. That'd be great. I have it right here. And it's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. And thanks again, James, for your question. Super. Hopefully, Wendy gave you some good suggestions. So we talked about getting out of our toxic social environments and, you know, trying to get into environments that accept us as we are. And that's the thing. And you're a proponent of teaching others, and I'm right on there with you, girl, same page, that we experience what we focus on. Whew, what do you mean by that? How can you just sort of explain that a little bit further?
Well, I believe that we are consciousness, and therefore whatever we put our awareness on is what we experience, and that belief is substantiated, at least in regard to research that shows that what we think is linked to what we feel.
Yes.
And
yes.
You could be sitting in a movie theater experiencing the movie while a whole bunch of other things are going on in the same room,
yes.
But you're not experiencing
yes.
those things because you're not focused on them.
Yes, exactly.
And just to give you an example of how powerful our focus can be, in my cancer experience, you'll read in my book, for reasons unbeknownst to me, my family had me stay in a hotel for a month. I lived in a hotel for a month.
Why?
I have no idea why. That's where they put me for a month to
what?
Do, I swear. You can ask my mom. I still don't know why they did this. I was there for a month to do radiation treatment. I lived
mm-hmm.
in this hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. So I have these memories of looking out the window of the hotel and seeing, you know, the sunrise over the mountains and the trees. And then when I went to go back to the hotel because I wanted to take photographs for the book,
yeah.
I discovered that what I had remembered was outside my window was an exaggeration of what was actually there, because what was actually there were little trees and tree boxes
mm-hmm.
and a trailer park
yeah.
behind which was the mountains. And so I used the power of my imagination or the power of my focus to just focus on the natural elements
mm-hmm.
and therefore that's all I remembered.
Isn't that interesting?
It's true.
Well, you're so strong in your mind, you know, we do create. Did you in your healing and well, let me just I'll ask that later. I just wanted to throw that out there. But in your healing, did you have a lot of visualization techniques you used
Absolutely.
While you were going through radiation?
Absolutely. With radiation, I had the unwanted. They told me they were going to radiate my heart, and my heart, I said, you cannot radiate my heart.
Woo!
I forbid you to radiate my heart. And they insisted. And
wow.
So I had to use the power of my imagination to imagine I could shield my heart to give me a sense of control. So every day before I did radiation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, during my little yoga practice, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would imagine myself shielding each of my organs. And
yes.
what's amazing
yeah.
is by the end of radiation treatment, I had burns on my back.
Right.
Where I had not done the visualization
yes.
because I had no idea they had been radiating my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no burns on my front where I had done the visualization.
Wow. Wow.
So it made me think, wow, maybe there really is something to this visualization.
Well, there is mind over matter. And it's proved time and time again, you know, in scientific experiments. And we're not talking about the voodoo. And but I mean, there's so much evidence about, you know, our thoughts and how powerful they are. And physiologically as well, when we are thinking that we are going to shield our hearts and our bodies. Let's go to science here now.
Right.
We're not going to release the creatine. We're not going to release all the nasty stuff.
That's right.
That's really trying to, you know, fight and, you know, really destroy our immune system further. We're not releasing that when we're feeling at peace.
That's right.
So scientifically, if you're creating that shield around your heart because that tumor is right there, girl, and they're zapping you.
They are.
You've protected that, and you have visually said, you know, it's going to be okay.
Yes.
So you're not releasing that stress
no.
and stuff. Wow.
Wow.
Love that.
Yeah.
You're such a trooper.
I'm
so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. So you talk about the gift of cancer and how miracles are real, and I believe in miracles. Rather, you know, don't so many people come to you and say, "It was such a coincidence." How can we keep our focus on miracles when we hear about serious health problems we or loved ones are diagnosed with, along with a lot of the negative information, you know, we get from social media, and that's all we hear. We turn on the TV and we always have these commercials for medications. We always listen to other people's constant complaints about their lives. So miracles really do happen. And however you want to frame them. I mean, some people go religious or spirituality, but just the idea that acknowledging, hey, this was a miracle. You were doomed, girl. And, you know, through some power, probably your own mind, in connection with that strong universal power, you were connected. So how do you describe, what's the deal with miracles? How can you help people kind of define those? Yeah.
Well, the first thing I want to share is that you are a miracle. Mm. Just like when you see a baby who's just been born and you say that baby's a miracle, you are no less miraculous than that baby, because you are that baby in a new form.
Yes, yes.
And so our eyes become dead to the miracles in the world. Our senses become dulled to the miracles in the world. And the way to awaken our senses is when we wake up, we can say, look for miracles and they will appear. And then we decide that day we're going to look for miracles. And every day that I decide to look for miracles, they appear. And I believe the same will be true for you.
So true.
So
no, I agree.
So the truth is, you are a miracle and life is a miracle. And just wake up today and say, my life is a miracle, and I'll look for those miracles and they'll appear.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
And, you know, again, it's almost like the scientific concept of when you, this is really corny, but when you decide to buy a new car, okay, and you say, I want to get a particular type of model and color. This is what I have in mind. You buy this new car, and you usually have never seen this car or hardly at all on the road, and then every other car you see is your car. It's almost like you believe you're going to see miracles, and you do see them. And they don't have to be like some you know, vaporous angel coming to your door, you know, kind of saying, I'm watching over you. You look out this window right here. We have beautiful studios here in Los Angeles, and there's some lovely Spanish style buildings. There's these beautiful trees, Italian cypress, and you know, it's kind of like sometimes when you really look at the top of the trees, you can see this amazing sort of lime green. And then if you go, you know, that's the kind of miracle, you know, seeing this is amazing. This is beautiful that I can see this.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It is amazing.
So whatever it is, you know, we can sort of, and that's part of gratefulness too. It's like, wow, thank you for letting me be able to see this and enjoy this. This blows me away.
Yes.
You know? And the more you reinforce that in your mind, the more you say, life's great, you're living proof.
Yeah.
No pun intended. You are living proof, girl. You've overcome cancer. You've overcome so many things in your life. And you're just, you're amazing. You're such a great influence on other people. If you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Wendy Trainer, and she's a PhD in social psychology. She's a social psychologist, and she's also written a wonderful book. It's called The Gift of Cancer, and it's about her overcoming a lot of obstacles in her life. Turn your tragedy into a treasure map to happiness. So there's so many ideas and suggestions on how Wendy got through her life issues and is still living la vida loca right now, and right? She's living proof of really, you know, doing so well. So let's talk about finding love.
Okay? Love it.
I think this is a really big, important thing, because we, We have another email here from someone. You described how someone can walk into our lives and how we'll never be the same again. Okay. Can you sort of share what was going on with you and your husband and your family at the time and how you found love?
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking. This sure. is so important. So I had, you know, just done almost a year of, you know, almost, I'd been diagnosed, this was almost a year after my diagnosis from mm-hmm. cancer.
Okay.
I'd been diagnosed in June 2015, and now it was about May of 2005, I was diagnosed, and now it was May of 2006. And I, you know, had just done mm-hmm. chemo, I'd mm-hmm. just done radiation, it'd been, in a, you know, a challenging year, and I expected to be able to go up north because I was living in Los Angeles with my parents because my mother had volunteered to take me under her wing.
Yes.
Because I understand it, my husband just had told me not to come back to, and I don't know why. I believe, I truly, truly believe
yes.
there were politics going on above my head.
Yes.
Things
yes.
I don't know about were going on between my husband and his family and my mother. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I
yeah,
had no
yeah.
idea what was going on.
Right.
But I was the one who would live the consequences
well,
of their
exactly.
gunshots, you know. So
your husband didn't want to sort of deal with you while you were going through cancer treatment.
Apparently not, because he did tell me to go back to my mother's when I had wanted to stay with him.
He was too scared, probably, to deal with his own emotions and the reality, too, of losing you, to give him a little
Give him some credit. Yeah.
But, I mean, he just didn't have that internal strength to cope with seeing you suffering so badly, too. Or he was a chicken and he was just an unfeeling dork.
So. We'll give him some credit.
Well,
that sounds
sorry.
Nice. I like
you
giving him credit. But here's what happened was
yeah.
I expected, you know, this is my husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he's living up north in the Bay Area and I'm being, you know, cared for by my mother in Southern California, my doctors are in the Bay Area, so I expected to be able to stay with my husband to do my checkups. And
yes.
I was doing research at Berkeley. So I was doing checkups
Ooh,
and research
girl.
At UC Berkeley.
Yes, yes.
And so I said, okay, you know, I'm coming up. I'd love, you know, of course, to stay with you. And of course, I thought he'd say, sure, you're my wife. Of course, mm-hmm. you stay with me. Mm-hmm. Instead, he said, you cannot stay at our house.
Oh, my gosh, honey.
And I know.
Oh, my gosh.
I had no idea why. To this day, I still have no idea
why. And
he's
never told you. He's
never
said,
told me. My
I
mother's never
talk
told
about
me.
It.
He's never told me. His family's never told me. I have no idea why. He was living with his parents, by the way.
Okay.
So it may have been his family.
That influence
we
probably
don't know.
Saying, yeah.
We
yeah.
don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, I was like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe this. It was like the ultimate
yeah.
insult. But I... So this is what happened. So we talked to my aunt, and she said, Wendy, why don't you just stay at the International House at UC Berkeley? It's a lovely place, and there'll be other students like
Ooh.
You. And so that's where I stayed.
Nice.
And
okay.
when I went there, I just did my yoga every day and did my walking in nature and, you know, tried to eat healthy. And then, unbeknownst to me, I fell in love.
Really?
Yeah.
With who and how did that work?
Well, it happened because I was there open, you know.
Yes.
My husband had just closed a door on me and I
yes.
thought, well, you know, if love knocks on my door again, I'm going to open it.
Good for you. See, a lot of people would be ready. A lot of people would just not be ready for that.
Yeah,
they
I was
just,
ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready for love.
Yeah.
After a lifetime of feeling like you've been beaten down,
right.
you decide, and you're almost dying for it. You're like, I'm ready for love.
Yes.
I'm
yes.
not going to stop love. So,
Aww.
And what's amazing is, like, within days after saying, or maybe even less than 24 hours after saying, if love knocks on my door again, I'm going to open it, love literally knocked on my door.
Mm.
And what's so amazing is this person... I don't know what to call him because I want to keep him anonymous.
Yes.
But just know that when my eyes locked with his, I felt that it was the first time in my life that I was really being seen for who I truly am.
Mm-hmm.
These were the
mm-hmm.
eyes of love.
Oh.
These were the eyes of true divine love.
Yes.
And I felt that this person had such compassion for my suffering and for everything that I'd gone through, and that now I'd finally met the one.
Uh-huh.
And so all of a sudden, with this new experience that was enlightening,
yes.
You know, all of a sudden it was like I'd woken up to the miracle of life in a way where I could really feel it in a way
yes.
I never had before.
Yes. Yeah.
And I let my heart lead. And
yes.
my heart took me down this amazing path. It was the path of truth. You know, I called a meeting with my husband and I said, look, you know, let's set each other free. And with that request, we met. He said, okay. And he took me out to lunch to celebrate.
Yes.
Who knew
wow.
divorce could be that easy?
Exactly. Exactly.
It was amazing.
I bet he was shocked, though. He was probably fearing, oh, she's going to be so dependent on me, and what if she gets sicker? And, you know,
yeah, he was really happy not to have the responsibility.
He didn't want to have to deal with it. Oh, my gosh. And you're laughing about
I know.
It. I love that,
it is.
Wendy.
It's
oh,
phenomenal. It's so fun.
So
life is a miracle. We've got to live it.
Yes, we
live
do.
The life of love. And if you don't know how, the way to do it is to follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Just listen to your heart, because it tells you what it likes
mm-hmm.
by giving you good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you feel joy?
Right.
That's the path to follow.
That's right.
Yeah.
How do you feel? What are you feeling? If you're not feeling happy, if, you know, being with someone makes you feel agitated and sad, if being in an environment makes you feel that way, or, you know, whatever it is, you get to choose sometimes. And that's like the cycle of bullying or an abuse, too. Some women, men, too. They don't think they have a choice to get
right.
out of it.
And that's a very important thing to remember, is that we do have a choice. We just don't know what it is yet. We do have a choice. We just don't know what it is yet.
Exactly.
And go meditate to find out.
Yes.
You know?
And you don't have to be, and I've said this so many times to my listeners, but you don't have to become a Zen Buddhist to meditate. It's really a no-brainer. It's really easy. Just quiet your mind. Breathe and just quiet your mind. Let those thoughts flow through, but come back to a special place in your mind, whether it's your favorite vacation spot or someone's face or a word or, you know, whatever, right? It's very easy to
Anyone
do.
Anyone can do it.
Yeah.
If I can do it, you can.
Yeah. And there's all these cool apps you can download on iTunes, you know, that, or YouTube rather, that, you know, have meditation tapes, even for 15 minutes. You know, people talking to you, suggesting with nice music. And you can find them all over, guys. If you don't know how to do it yourself, plug it in. Put those earbuds on and just still your mind, calm your mind, instead of getting up like, you know, a gun in the morning, like, I'm off. I've got to do this. Calm your mind. Heal yourself. Stop that crazy stuff from releasing and defeating your body's immune system. You know, and knocking you down. It's about that time. We got to go pretty soon. I know. This has been so fun and gone so fast, Wendy. This is great. So, Wendy Trainer, Dr. Wendy Trainer, what's the best way for listeners to get your book, The Gift of Cancer, along with your other books? And there's this wonderful book, you know, on socialization theory.
Yes.
Ooh, is that a good one, too, Aww. About really getting your act together and finding
Aww.
Out who you are in the world, people.
Yes.
So what's the best way to find your books and
awesome.
And get to your seminars, too, because you do give a lot of help
I
with
do.
People.
I
yeah.
do. And a lot of the seminars that I'm giving are free of charge.
Ooh, I like that.
Which means anyone can come.
Yay. That's great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's the most thrilling part of my work.
Oh, that's so nice.
So you can get the books at amazon.com mm-hmm. at giftofcancer.com. That's mm-hmm. a link that I have pointed to the site where the Gift of Cancer book is available.
Great.
And if your experience on Amazon is like mine, it will lead you to other books I've written also.
Yes, exactly.
And if your experience is not like mine, you can find my books at icanheal.com, which is my website.
Yes, I love that one. It's really good. And it gives you all this great information about Wendy Trainer and how she can train you. and help you and get a hold of her book, guys. It really is inspiring. And you don't have to be, you know, coping with a severe illness, although it does help. It's wonderful and inspirational for y'all. Wendy, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're great. You're
a doll. I love you. I love you so much, Dr. Michelle.
I love your spirit and all that you do for everybody,
thank
too.
You.
So it's great to have you in the studio, too. It's really a pleasure to see you.
Such an honor to be here. And thank you, all our listeners, for being with me today. It means so much to me. Aww. Take care.
Yeah, beautifully said. All right, we've got to get going here. So listen, more great shows coming up throughout the month. And I just want you to know that I'm always here for you, folks. If you want to email me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, you have questions or comments, the show will be available for download and replay tomorrow. All my shows are available for free on iTunes podcasts as well. And as I always do say, take good care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way the world works. Have a good one, guys. Take care. See you next week. Bye.
Flashing red.